Hello, everyone. Welcome to This Week in Mormon Sisters Edition with Ariane Smith
and Tiffany Hales.
We are happy to be back this week.
We are very happy to be back this week. Now, we are both in a little bit of a sugar coma tonight.
Yeah, we got a lot of sugar in our system.
Yeah, we got a lot of sugar.
Because we both had Release Society Christmas parties.
Exactly.
Right before we recorded this.
Exactly.
Different wards, different stakes, just happened to be on the same night.
So the meeting formerly known as Enrichment.
That's right.
Which is now, I don't know, what is it? Relief Society Activities Committee?
It's called a Relief Society meeting.
Oh, okay.
They just call it a meeting.
I never know what the correct terminology is these days.
It changes a lot.
Yes. So we both had them tonight. You had yours in your ward, mm-hmm. and you were in charge.
Yeah. We had hot cocoa, cookies, a little like favorite things gift exchange. Oh, look, everybody.
Favorite things gift exchange.
It's not me. This was a tradition in this ward before I came along.
Okay. Well, you better explain to our listeners what that is.
So it's fun. It's everybody brings, well, whoever wants to participate, it's optional, can bring a favorite thing, $5 or less.
Okay.
And we used to do, well, in previous years, they've done like white elephant style where you trade and you steal and la, la, la.
Yeah.
But in the effort of saving time and
hurt feelings.
Yes.
Do people get hurt feelings when their stuff gets stolen?
Probably. It could happen.
Buck up. They need to get a thicker skin. They need to come to our family Christmas party. We are ruthless at our extended family Christmas party.
Anyway, in an effort to simplify this year, we just kind of had a past the present kind of game. And then you open it up and the person who brings it gets to say why it's like their favorite thing.
Okay.
So, you know.
Okay. So you
fits right in for me because we like to share our favorite things with
everybody. You need to share what you brought tonight and what you got.
I got really cool things. I got like a little tiny set of kitchen stuff. I got a rubber whisk.
Uh-huh.
And I got a really big scoop that would be good for like scooping muffins or giant cookies. And a scrub brush for doing dishes.
So, dang. Yeah. Oh, you scored.
I did score. I brought nail polish. And it was kind
you
of
brought
a,
nail polish.
It's kind of a cop-out gift, I will admit. So I was in charge of the thing. So I was getting a lot of things ready. And I have like a little basket that I keep on hand, like gifts.
Yeah.
To have handy whenever I need to give a gift to someone. I was going to go out and specifically find something for this event. And then I had a child throwing up last night.
Oh, dear.
And then I was taking care of all the details. I was like, I better just pick something out of my closet. So I had a little set of nail polishes that I had bought a while back.
Okay. Well, I hope they were at least the good nail polish.
They were the good nail polishes. Okay. They were little minis of the good nail polishes.
Okay. Well, so if you brought cheap nail polish, then, you know, our sisterhood might be over.
No. I mean, luckily I had something on hand.
Okay.
But yeah. I did not put a lot of effort into that this year, but.
Okay. So we have to talk about how your cookies went over. So for our viewer or our listeners, last week, Ariane and I were wanting to attempt a new frosting technique with cookies. So we really like the cookies that look like they've been frosted, like with royal icing, but royal icing is disgusting. So we don't do royal icing. And you had heard of this trick where you take store-bought icing.
Can of store-bought icing.
Okay.
Melt it in the microwave and it looks all runny and fancy like royal icing.
And then you put it on the cookie.
But it tastes better.
Okay.
So we got together.
Yes. Last week we got together.
We tried it out. It was very fun. And I was like, well, if we're going to try this out, we're going to try it out on the cookies that I have to bring to the event. So we did. And we made a ton of cookies and I put them in the freezer and pulled them out today.
And they were really cute. We put Christmas plaids on them and they were adorable.
Yeah. They turned out great.
So I want to know, what did everybody think of your fancy cookies tonight?
They liked the cookies.
Very good.
They were hit.
Very good. I'm glad to hear that.
Anyway, it was great. And we had a speaker also and it was good. How was your night? You had hot chocolate also?
We had hot chocolate also. So
'tis the season.
'Tis the season. And I dare say, I think my hot chocolate was superior to yours.
I know it was. You told me what you put in it. Mine was water and powder. I was thinking about doing a fancy recipe. And then I was like, nah, I don't have time for that. Can't handle it.
Well, I had a twofold assignment tonight. Assignment number one. Well, let me tell you what we did tonight. So what we did tonight is we had about the first 30 minutes, we talked about ways to incorporate Christ into Christmas.
Uh-huh.
You know, simple ways, complicated ways, you know, we just kind of covered the gamut of things. So the theme of our event was jingle and mingle. So after we had our little spiritual thought, then we were jingling and mingling.
Oh, nice.
So we had two activities you could participate in after that, or you could just sit and mingle and talk, whatever uh-huh. you wanted to do. So we had a bow making class with a bow dazzler, which is a machine that can help you make fancy bows. If you're all thumbs when it comes to bow making.
Mm-hmm.
And then the class that I was in charge of was gift tags. Mm-hmm. And so we had all the little pieces, parts to make gift tags. So while we were participating in these activities, we had a hot chocolate bar. So my responsibility was the gift tags and to bring the hot chocolate for the hot chocolate portion of the hot chocolate bar. We also had wassail, and then we had all sorts of add-ins. Well, I promptly delegated my hot chocolate making to the Ward Scout Master. Because nobody is going to know how to make hot chocolate better than the Ward Scoutmaster. Now, you're probably wondering, how was it that I was able to convince the Ward Scoutmaster to do that? I sleep with him every night. I'm married to him.
Yes.
So that is my husband's current calling, and he is the king of hot chocolate. So this is what he did. I had a big old one of those 5 gallon insulated jugs, mm-hmm. which I promptly wrapped wrapping paper around and dressed it up because this was a fancy Relief Society event.
You cannot take an orange sports jug to a Relief Society event.
Oh, please no. What? No. That may be perfectly acceptable for scouts, but not for sisters. So he took the hot chocolate mix that you get from the cannery, or I guess it's not really church distribution, but you know, where they sell right. like food type cannery supplies.
Which is Stevens, isn't it?
I don't know if it's Stevens or what it is. It's not marked as Stevens. It's just marked as hot chocolate.
I heard rumor it was actual Stevens hot chocolate.
Well, it might be.
I heard that rumor many years ago. I don't know if it's true.
Yeah. And for those of you outside of Utah, Stevens is a big hot chocolate company in Utah.
In all of the West. I think they sell it all over the West.
Well, I think they sell it all over the West, but they make it in Utah.
Right.
Anyway, so we buy hot chocolate in those 25-pound bags because as the Scoutmaster mm-hmm. and in Young Men's, you can only imagine how frequently hot chocolate is consumed,
mm-hmm.
at least in the months of October through March. So he took the powdered mix that we get at the cannery.
Mm-hmm.
He added in a gallon of whole milk, 3/4 gallon of half and half, and water, and heated that all up and mixed it together. And it was the creamiest, richest hot chocolate you've ever had in your life, and probably a good, 1,000 calories a cup, but it was good.
Yeah, it was good. You gave me a cup when I got here. Far superior to my hot chocolate.
That's all I'm saying.
I might have to talk him into helping me next year.
Well, and then the other thing that we did is we had a sister in our ward who made homemade marshmallows. Mm. And they were divine. So we had squares of homemade marshmallows in our fancy hot chocolate.
Well, you are just...
Oh, we were highfalutin
super
tonight.
Super fancy.
Oh, yes, we were. All right. So our first story is actually, this is actually a really sad story. This happened yesterday at BYU. There was a freshman student who attempted to commit suicide. She was in the Tanner building, which is the business building on the BYU campus. She was on the 4th floor and she jumped from the 4th floor.
Oh, so sad.
And she did live. They took her to the hospital. She was in very, very critical condition. But it was traumatic. I mean, not only traumatic for her, but traumatic for, there were some students who witnessed it.
Right.
There were students in class at the time who heard it, and just kind of an all around, sad kind of situation. And so, people struggle all year round, regardless of whether or not it's the holidays. And it's a good reminder that to be aware of those who are around you and to talk to them, and that if you're feeling down, there's a lot of resources out there that can help you. And so hopefully this girl survives and doesn't suffer from long-term injuries and is able to get whatever help she needs, and that her friends and family will rally around her. But super sad story for the holidays. So
yeah,
kind of sad to start off on that one, but it's an important discussion to have because suicide is something that, you know, it's affected our family and it affects a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. So we need to keep that in mind.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the church has recently made a lot more statements on it. And
exactly.
Been becoming more aware of it or publicly acknowledging. Yeah. And it's just a sad, sad thing.
All right. Well, let's move on to a different story. Okay.
So this story is another political one. I know last month when we recorded, I believe it was the night before the elections.
It was the night before the elections.
And we were talking about the crazy Utah politicians.
Mormons behaving badly.
And yes, members of the church that had used their membership to, you know, try to get the votes.
I think that they had insinuated church things to try and get the votes.
That's right. They were quoting scriptures in their material.
Exactly.
In their political ads.
Exactly.
So this one, it just came out this week, but it happened before the election. So what happened? A stake in South Jordan, Utah, just outside of Salt Lake. Somebody recorded during state conference, which, you know, now we know why they make that announcement. But
don't record. No recording.
This recording recently came out this week. The stake president of this stake, his name is Marty Stevens, and he professionally is a lobbyist for the church.
In fact, I think he actually used to be in the legislature as well.
Oh, really?
Yes, I recall correctly. Okay. He formerly was in the legislature, but now he is the chief lobbyist for the church.
Right. So
that would be the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day
Saints.
That's
right. The church, you know.
Yes.
So I guess that they had state conference 2 days before the election. And during state conference, over the pulpit before the election, he encouraged the people to follow the prophet. As you know, the church had come out recently on Prop 2 in Utah, which was their medical marijuana prop that they were trying to get passed. The church had come out against it, I don't know, a couple months before.
Yes.
So over the pulpit during state conference, he basically said, it comes down, this is a quote, direct quote, it comes down to a question of whether or not we're going to follow the prophet. He counsels, then we have our agency to choose. But for me, if the prophet speaks, I'm going to do my best to follow. And that was in reference to Prop 2.
Proposition 2.
And the debate on medical marijuana.
Ooh.
So, yeah. Very, very. I mean, he wasn't messing around. He basically said,
y'all better vote against it.
Yeah. 2 days before the election. So anyway, so this then came out recently. Somebody had recorded it and anonymously sent it to the press. So this whole article is about it in the Salt Lake Tribune, talking about it. And it quoted a lot of what it says in the handbook.
Yes.
Because we know there are very specific instructions in the handbook about political things. So handbook 2, which is for the leaders, instructs the leaders that the faith stays neutral on political platforms and candidates. However, in some exceptional instances, the church will take a position on specific legislation, particularly when it concludes that moral issues are involved. But also in the handbook, it says stake presidents and other local leaders should not organize members to participate in political matters or attempt to influence how they participate.
Oh.
So there's a little bit of...
That would be a little bit of a problem based on what he said.
Yes. Like there's a little bit of leeway in there. It's a moral issue.
Yeah.
The church will come out. And I think we see this, so they see this much more in Utah.
Exactly.
Because the church headquarters is there. They are very involved in politics. It's just the way it is. But, oh goodness, I like it when they just keep it behind the scenes.
Exactly. Or, you know, I mean, I can understand them coming out against the medical marijuana issue. I can understand them coming out against a gambling issue and the church making a statement. Where I think this crosses the line is where he gets up and state conference and says, the church has said this.
Right.
I'm going to follow the prophet. You should follow the prophet.
Follow the prophet.
I think that's kind of where it goes beyond what the handbook says is acceptable. Because I think at that point in time, you've got leadership
right.
encouraging to say, hey, follow what the church says. And again, you know, generally speaking, you know, when the church makes a statement, it realizes that people have the free agency to vote their conscience. And I don't think I've been aware of anybody who's been excommunicated for voting in opposition
right.
to the church. I mean, maybe excommunicated for expressing an opinion in opposition to the church. But as far as, you know, deciding to vote, and clearly there were members who went in opposition because this Prop 2 passed.
Yeah, it did pass. Although this, they had some interesting statistics in the article. Even though it passed, they polled members in June, which was before the church had come out
okay.
with its statement, and 54% of active members in June were for the prop.
Oh.
And then they polled them again in October, which was after the okay. church had made its statement, and it had gone down to 28%.
Okay.
So big drop.
Okay, so about half of them listened to the prophet, and half of them are like, yeah, I'm going to do my own thing.
But it still passed.
It still passed.
But now they're duking it out, you tell me.
They are. I think it was just yesterday that the legislature got together and they said, yeah, we know you passed that proposition, but we really don't like that proposition. So we're not going to enact that proposition and we're going to kind of do our own thing. And they put some pretty stringent guidelines in that were not part of the proposition. I'm sure the whole thing's going to end up in court.
Wow.
So
anyway, Utah politics, it is.
There's nothing like it.
It is crazy down there.
We've said it once and we'll probably say it again. It's a wild roller coaster ride.
Yes, it is.
Okay, let's move on to Elder Holland. Elder Holland has been on a little tour. He went to jolly old England.
No.
Now, he also served his mission in England.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, he served his mission in England. I was really excited to read these stories and cover these stories because the Hales side of our family hails from England. They were all in England and then they joined the church. And of course they migrated over here, to be with the saints. But I consider that connection to make me kind of akin with the British people. I feel my British roots very strongly.
This is why you love the royals so
this
much.
This is why I love the royals so much. That is where my ancestry originated.
These were cool stories though.
These were very.
He has been over in England just.
Very cool stories.
Doing his thing.
So he shows up over in England. And of course, you know, one of the first places he goes is he's like, well, let's go hang out in Parliament. So he goes to Parliament and of course, obviously he was invited there and is watching a very lively debate that they're having in Parliament. And they take a little lunch break and the Prime Minister is a woman by the name of Theresa May. And so she agrees to meet with him. So after this lunch break, she has about 15 minutes before she apparently has to go deal with some Brexit issues. Mm-hmm. And so she meets with Elder Holland and Elder Holland says to her, he says to Prime Minister Theresa May, I said, given the kind of day you've had and the week you're having, this is meant to be kind of a respite, Elder Holland said after meeting May. And she said, this is a true interlude. This is a happy moment. She smiled about that. I think it was nice for her to have somebody who was not shouting in her face or shaking a fist over some element of Brexit. So he presents her with a wall hanging of her family pedigree, which she said she was going to hang at number 10 Downing Street, mm-hmm. her official residence. He also presents to her a leather-bound copy of the Book of Mormon with an inscription from the First Presidency. So in addition to meeting her, he had some other members of Parliament that were with her. Apparently, just like our Congress, there are actual members of the Church of Latter-day Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Parliament. So he had, so his wife Patricia was with him, and he had David Rutley and Stephen Kerr and Elder Alan T. Phillips, who is an area 70, and Paul Carey, an Oxford fellow. So David Rutley and Stephen Kerr are actually members of Parliament.
Okay.
And they said it was such an honor for them to see an apostle and shake his hand and be with that apostle when they met the prime minister, because as far as they know, there was no sitting prime minister who had ever had the good fortune of meeting an apostle before Elder Holland met with her.
Really?
I know. I kind of found that hard to believe.
I know. That's surprising.
But here's a really interesting quote that Elder Holland said to kind of sum up his visit to Parliament. "We have never had a day in Parliament like today," Elder Holland said. You do not get many meetings with prime ministers. As a 19-year-old missionary here, I wanted to get in any door at all. I never thought a day would come when I would get in the door of Parliament or to the office of the Prime Minister.
Oh, that's cool.
So come a long way. So after he finished his little jaunt to London, he then hauls himself up the road to Oxford, right, which of course is the home of Cambridge University.
Yes.
So he hauls himself to Oxford. And one of the first things he does when he hauls himself to Oxford is he gets invited to join this panel. And this panel is talking about how we as human beings are all connected to each other. So he is serving on this. He's on this panel with Lord David Elton, who is a Catholic who's been in the British Parliament for 40 years. Another panelist was Methodist, Reverend Francis Young. There was Williams, an Anglican Welshman who stepped down as Archbishop in 2012 and is now the master of Magdalen College at Cambridge University and a member of the House of Lords. So it was a former Archbishop.
Okay.
So, like some big wigs.
Like all these prestigious religious people.
Religious people. And the overwhelming conclusion that this panel was talking about is the need for us as human beings to connect with each other. And Elder Holland said, and I really like this, "We need God, but he also needs us. It's an inspiring thought to think that not only humankind, but divinity itself needs our heart and needs our helping hand. Surely that must be one of the ways that we're heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ."
That's good.
So it is.
Good stuff.
And he talks about how humbled he was to be on this panel. He said he represented a unique faith, the only American one to survive an extermination order. And he said it did so because of service, compassion, and charity of others. Mm-hmm. So. And then one of his, well, I'm sure he made many stops, but one of his last stops that I thought was very notable was he was invited to a Christmas service in Oxford, England, at what is known as, it was on the university's site, and it was Pembroke College Chapel. So he is invited to their Christmas service.
One of those big old fancy churches, I'm
yes.
sure.
In fact, I actually, my first husband and I, when we went to London or to England, we went to Oxford and we were in this church. It's very, so very, it's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. And so this Christmas service has, of course, a lot of hymns in it. The Archbishop, or not the Archbishop, but the other, what am I thinking of?
Minister
that was there speaks, and then they give Elder Holland an opportunity to speak.
I know, this is really cool.
This is really cool. And what he is talking about is he's talking about how the atonement is part of Christmas. And he talks about, he starts with talking about Luke chapter 2 and Simon, who shortly after Christ was born, gave a profound Christmas message in the sign this dear old man gave Mary when the weeks old Christ child was in his arms at the temple. Simon rejoiced at the fulfillment of a promise that he would see the Messiah, but he also issued a dire warning that the child's life, or more specifically his death, would be like a sword piercing through his beloved mother's soul, which of course we know is very true. So Elder Holland likened this to when his father passed away. His father passed away on Christmas in 1976.
This story was so interesting. I had never heard I haven't ever heard him tell this before. Have
no,
you?
No, I've never heard him tell this before.
Just like such a personal story. I don't feel like we always get that from him.
Exactly.
But this was a great story.
For him to share this, yeah. you know, in this setting that is essentially in another church. It was in the Church of England. So he says that his father had two heart attacks after back surgery on December 23rd, 1976. When he got to his father on the 24th of December, he was wired and tubed in gray, and he mutters to himself, magnificent timing. You know, he's right. not very happy about
he's
this.
He's mad. I mean...
He is. He's upset.
Nobody wants this at Christmas time.
Exactly. So he's feeling sorry for himself, wondering why he's having to lose his father at Christmas. Mm-hmm. And about 3 a.m, in the middle of this sorrow and self-pity, which I find super humanizing, because mm-hmm. who has not had those times when you just kind of have a pity party for yourself?
Right.
And it's so humanizing when you hear an apostle talking about these very difficult times that they've had in their lives, because sometimes we look at those apostles and we say, oh, they're so blessed. They don't understand. They've never had it that hard.
Right.
But they really have. So he talks about, while he's having this sorrow and self-pity, in the midst of my mumbling about my very poor calendaring and all of this, I heard the clear, unbroken cry of a baby. And that baby kind of brings him back to reality. He said the calendaring and divine grace of the timing of that birth changed his outlook. He recognized the joy that child must be in its parents' lives. He remembered that his mother always reminded him of the joy he brought her as a Christmas baby himself. And so he said, with new eyes that morning, I went back to look at my dad, the great gift giver who was starting to make his way out of this world on Christmas Day. He was doing so on the wings of the greatest gift ever given, the atonement and resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ. I thought of another father who gave that gift. Just a beautiful,
really cool,
beautiful story.
Good, good read.
Yes.
I recommend everybody go read the article.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay.
It's a good one. Okay. Next story. This is actually a podcast. It's a story about linked to a podcast.
Yes.
So KSL recently has put out a podcast called Cold.
And they got on the true crime bandwagon.
That's right.
Everybody's doing true crime podcasts.
Everybody likes a true crime podcast. That's true. So they have jumped on, and this podcast, Cold, is telling the story of Josh Powell and his wife, Susan. Now, if you remember this story, this took place back in, isn't it, 2010?
Well, no.
When she disappeared.
I think it was... It was December of 2009.
Oh, it was 2009.
So it was 9 years ago.
So if you remember, they were living in Utah at the time. They were an LDS couple, married couple. They had a couple of boys, and the wife had disappeared, and there was all kinds of suspicion around the husband and the husband's father, but nothing, they never could convict him or get enough evidence, but
against the husband.
Against the husband.
Yes.
But for months, this speculation went on, and it was this whole big thing and tragic ending with he moved the boys out of state. There was a custody battle with him and the girls,
parents.
His wife's parents. It was just a mess. Anyways.
Well, and the other interesting thing that happens in all of this is, so he's, the children are with her parents.
Mm-hmm.
He is living with his father. They go and execute a search warrant at his father's house looking for evidence of Josh, that he may have committed this crime. And in the process of that search warrant, they discover that daddy is a voyeur and has been videotaping the teenage girl across the street. So Josh doesn't get arrested, but his father does.
Real, real creepy.
Yes.
So many layers of creepiness.
Exactly. So many layers of creepiness.
Anyway, super just tragic story, but it's, you know, I mean, it was all over. I remember Nancy Grace, good old Nancy Grace.
CNN.
Every night she was all over this back, you know, back in 2009, 2010. Anyway, this podcast is really interesting because they did a records request and they got tons and tons of information. I mean, they must have spent years sorting through this information to prep for this story and podcast.
Well,
they have recordings, audio recordings.
I do have to say, both Josh and Susan Powell really followed President Kimball's advice to keep a journal.
That's true. There are journals, lots of recordings, audio journals.
Yes, audio journals.
Just so much information. So the podcast is kind of digging through it and kind of giving you more of a clear picture of what went on. And it's really interesting just to see what really happened. I mean, we just got the tiniest little, you know, snippet at the time because the media and the police were being very careful not to release too much information because it was still an open investigation.
Exactly.
So this, just all kinds of information. So it's just, there's only maybe four episodes so far.
I think there's four or five episodes.
And it's going to be ongoing. It's called Cold from KSL. And
it is, I have to say, I have listened to it. It is so good and it is absolutely riveting because there is so much that never came out in the media that they obtained through this public records request.
Right.
That you learn about his past relationships. You learn about how his parents' divorce impacted him.
Right. And you learn about the church.
You learn about the
church life. He was kind of in and out.
He was kind of in and out
at various stages. And so really interesting.
I'm trying to think what day of the week they release.
I think it's Wednesdays.
I think it's Wednesdays too. So every week they're releasing a new episode. So go find that podcast.
It's pretty interesting.
Okay. Our next story is entitled Court Documents, Latter-day Saint Antiques Dealer Sold Fake Items and Stole Rare Photos. Again, Mormons behaving badly. One of our favorite segments on this podcast.
There's always one.
Like
every time.
We like a good Mormon behaving badly. They give us good material.
They do.
So this particular gentleman, and let's find his name here. His last name is Schuer. I'm not sure. I don't know what happened to his first name in the article that I'm reading, but his last name is
Brother Schuer.
Brother Schuer. We'll call him that. So what he would do is he would go to like BYU's library. He would go to like Daughters of the Utah Pioneers Museum, and he would ask to see certain photos. He would take the original of the photo. He'd just slip it out and slip it into something else, and he would put a copy in its place. And then he took the original, and he would sell the original for large quantities of money. So the other thing that,
this story is crazy to me. When I read the story, all I could think about was like Ocean's 11. I was like, he is running a very mini, scaled down, churchy version of Ocean 11. That's his life.
Okay, I'm going to admit I've never seen Ocean's 11. So
you've never seen Ocean 11?
I've never seen Ocean's 11.
Oh, so you probably haven't seen the other ones? Ocean's 12?
No.
Ocean's 8?
No.
All of them. This is like...
This is what they do.
This is the LDS version of the Ocean's movies.
Because, see, I made this story and I hearken back to Mark Hoffman of the 1980s. And I said that to you earlier and you're like, Mark who? And I was like, come on. You don't know Mark Hoffman who created all these fake documents and sold them to the church and dealers?
I was a little kid back then.
I know. Killed a guy with a bomb, nearly killed himself with the bomb, killed a lady with a bomb.
No, but I think someone needs to do a podcast on that so that I can have the story.
Well, you know what? There are some podcasts. Because I listened to a podcast out there on it. And I'm trying to remember. It was a couple years ago. So somebody did do it. I just don't recall who.
All right. So what happened to Brother Schuer?
So
he's in big trouble.
Yes. He also took three rare LDS books that he sold to people. He was manufacturing digital reproductions of photographs that he was selling to people. He created a counterfeit 1835 LDS church hymnal, which he sold for $65,000.
That is insane. Who is buying these old church hymnals for $65,000.
I have no idea. He created a counterfeit 1849 Mormon gold coin. I mean, he just was bilking people right and left with all of his fakes. So he ended up pleading guilty in court. I believe he has to repay almost $700,000 in money that he took.
Wow.
And of course, I'm quite sure there's going to be a little bit of jail time involved. So...
It's interesting, too, because he's pretty young. I think it said in the article he's 29.
Is that what it said?
Doesn't that seem young to be doing all this?
Okay. Oh, Kevin. His first name is Kevin Shure.
Kevin.
So, yeah, 29 seems a little young to be doing all of this. But I don't know. You never know. So, like
Very
I said,
interesting.
Harkens back to me to Mark Hoffman stories, but at least nobody died.
Okay. Oh, goodness. All right, so next story, we have a couple of really good stories that came out about the campfires in California. And we know that this was a while ago. This is about a month ago. And I think Jeff mentioned them in one of the podcasts, but didn't really dive super deep. So we just wanted to hit on these stories because these are stories of a couple of members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And their experiences yes. with the campfire,
which were completely fascinating. I read many of these stories yeah. of members of the church and how they were moved by the Spirit
right.
to be able to take certain actions.
Yeah. Super interesting. So the first one was a video that CNN actually featured, and it was a video of an LDS woman praying in her car as she was escaping.
Yeah. So her husband is driving.
Right.
Yes.
Husband's driving. I don't know how she was probably recording video as they were yeah. driving, and she says a prayer in the car and it gets caught on video, and she ended up posting it, on some form of social media, and CNN picked it up and then interviewed her. I did not actually listen to the audio. Did you?
I did not listen to the audio. I just read the story about it.
But I guess she, as she was praying was, you know, thanking Heavenly Father that they were, you know, getting out, appeared to be getting out, asking for help, expressing gratitude. And she got to go on CNN and she was able to, in a way, share her testimony yes. on CNN of, you know, that she believes in God. And, you know, as she prayed, she felt his protection.
So she did.
That was pretty cool.
But she also says her children had escaped earlier that morning with their grandmother.
Right.
So her children, their escape, the fires hadn't raged when her children left town.
Right.
And it was only a short time later, I think like 30 minutes later, when she and her husband left, and they had a very different experience. And she does say in the video that, you know, I wasn't really sure I was ever going to see my kids again.
Right.
So, but scary. Still had the peace.
Scary, scary. So, and then the other story is the story of how the Spirit led one, says how the Spirit led one Latter-day Saint to save a woman from the campfire. And this story was about a deputy sheriff named Charlie Harrison. He was in Chico when he heard about the evacuation of his hometown. He was from Paradise.
Yes.
So, he was off duty, but he immediately, you know, jumped in his car, drove back up to Paradise, could see that a smoke and a blaze were close to his house.
Yes.
So he's just driving in this mess, sees that his house is in danger, but he's, you know, trying to help other people evacuate. So he said as he's driving, I think he was with another
He was. He had a partner with him. And I think that they had gone up there and directed traffic right. for a little while. Yeah. And once traffic died down.
They were knocking doors.
Exactly.
Getting people out.
Getting people out.
So he said that he saw a sprinkler on somebody's roof. And he had the thought in his head, that is a really good idea. That might be all I could do to save my house. So when they finished their rounds of evacuating people, he said to his partner, hey, can we swing by my house really quick? So they drive up to his house with the intention of him putting his sprinkler on his roof. And as they drive up his street, they see an elderly woman in the house across the street from his, standing in the driveway, not sure what to do.
And isn't she just standing there like with her cane?
Yeah, she's just standing out there. And I guess her husband had left earlier that morning.
Yes.
Just to drive down to Chico for something else.
Yeah.
And by the time the fire got bad, he couldn't get back to her because they were evacuating and they wouldn't let him in the zone. So she was just stuck and had no way to get out, no way to drive, no husband to help her.
Well, I think they said she had a car, but she just didn't know how to drive.
As many elderly ladies.
Exactly.
So
we had a grandmother who never drove. That's my right. grandfather drove her everywhere.
That's right. So he says that as he was driving towards his house, he kept thinking, this is a really bad idea. This is a really bad idea. I guess the fire was just getting so bad.
And he's wondering, why am I going towards the fire?
Yes. And he felt like he wanted to turn around, but he said something kept telling him to keep going, to keep going. And now he's convinced that it was the spirit guiding him to get back to his neighborhood and find this little lady. And so they were able to, you know, throw her in the police car with them and get her out. He ran into his house, grabbed a few things. It did not say whether he put the sprinkler on his roof.
I don't think he got the sprinkler on his roof. I think he was more concerned, I'm grabbing some documents, I'm getting out of Dodge.
And it also did not say whether his house survived. But it said the fire
I'm guessing no.
Said the fire was about two doors down.
Yeah.
So.
Probably not.
Anyway, it was a cool story. He said, she's not a member of the church, but she's a child of God. And even though she is old, Father in Heaven was protecting his daughter.
I love that.
Really
cool. I absolutely, absolutely love that. So lots of just amazing stories of selfless behavior of people helping each other out of that fire.
Yeah, all kinds of people helping. So,
okay, let's move on to Light the World. We know
it's
that
Light the World time.
Exactly. Light the World is back in full force. I do like what they've done this year. Instead of having a different thing every day, they have a theme every week, which seems far less overwhelming.
Oh, that is less. See, I haven't even looked at it yet because I've been just so overwhelmed with
everything
my life
else.
Right now.
Exactly.
I have not even had a chance to sit down. So they're doing a different theme every week.
A different theme
so
every
is this week.
Week.
The service week.
I think this week is. I know that Monday or Saturday. Last Saturday was the day of service.
Okay.
And so they encouraged everybody to go out and do an act of service. Mm-hmm. And then this is awful. I can't even remember what this week's theme is. I just know that like each week has a different theme.
I like it.
I looked at it last week, but I like totally forgot.
I do feel like I could handle it. A week-long theme a little better.
Exactly. Yeah. It seemed a little overwhelming
last year.
A
little more doable.
Exactly. So. But as part of that, you may remember last year, the church put up vending machines for Light the World.
Yes. They were cool looking.
They put them up in New York City, in London, and I believe in Manila in the Philippines. So they had three places around the world where they had these vending machines.
Okay.
Well, and you could go to...
I thought they were just Salt Lake.
Oh, and then that's right. They had one in Salt Lake last year too. No, they had them around the world last year.
I didn't
realize
that. That's cool.
So, and you go to these vending machines and you can like buy a cow. And then the cow goes to like, you know, you buy a card that says, you know, I'm buying a cow
right.
and they charge you the price of the cow. And, you know, then they take that money to go buy a cow for whoever
right.
they're buying a cow for. And there's many different things and many different price points in these machines. And these machines were such a huge hit last year that they put them back again this year.
Yeah.
So the story that we have is from a writer who is not a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Mm-hmm. She is a hardened New Yorker who goes to the machines, which are located in Columbus Circle, where the temple is in New York City to see what's going on. And so she talks about this and she says, you know, by the machines, there's these three Mormon missionaries and they helped people make purchases and answered questions. And they emphasized to the people, hey, none of these donations go to the LDS temple, but that 100% of the donation goes to the item that you purchased.
Right.
And so she talks about, you know, the people purchasing items. And she says that, speaking of Mormons, Utah is much more charitable than New York. Last week, I came across a map of charitable giving by county in the United States. The Bible Belt and the Mormon Belt in Utah came out looking good, while the Northeast and Wisconsin look pretty stingy. Maybe Mormons can get New Yorkers into a charitable mood this Christmas.
That's interesting. Why Wisconsin?
I have no idea. I have no idea why the Northeast. The Northeast and Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin.
They're not interested in giving.
What's going on in Wisconsin?
Or charity or anything like that for that matter. I don't know what's going on in Wisconsin.
I'm just curious. It seems random.
It does seem random.
All right. Well, this one's just a quick little blurb that has been put out by the Church News that the Tabernacle Choir
at Temple Square. Tab Cats.
Did I get it right?
Yes you did. It is really hard not to say Motab.
I know it is.
That is going to be a habit that is hard to break.
Yeah, it is.
So
the choir, the Tab Choir, is looking for a part-time organist. They have a position that is open. So this was kind of interesting to me because I did not realize the degree. I mean, literally.
Tell them what the qualifications are.
You got to have some serious, serious resume going on for this job.
And this is a part-time position, no less.
Part-time position, only 10 hours a week. So, I mean,
exactly.
How much does it pay?
I don't know.
Anyway, interested persons should have a master's degree in music with emphasis in organ performance and several years of professional experience, plus a bachelor's degree in music with strong emphasis in organ performance, plus substantial professional experience.
Yeah. So if you're playing in church on Sunday just for fun, it's not going to cut it.
My husband's dreams will be crushed.
I know. Well, and they do say that part-time organist position in anticipation of future retirement. So it makes me wonder, so are we hiring you part-time to see if we like you? And then if we like you, you know, maybe when one of the other organists decides to give it up, we'll make you permanent.
It's like an internship.
Exactly. A little mini internship.
A 10-hour week internship. So you better get another gig.
Yeah, you're going to have another
better
gig.
Better have a side hustle. Actually, this is your side hustle. You better have something good.
Exactly.
Anyway.
All right.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. So we are, you know what? Let's just make one other note. We're not going to talk about this super long. We do have an article that was in LDS Living on 18 movies to watch with your family this holiday season. We will definitely put a link to this. Some of these, they're not all holiday movies. Some of these are movies you've heard of before.
I was trying to figure out if these all have a church connection. Like, are they all made by LDS filmmakers?
I don't know. You know, the first one they reference is Trek, the movie, which is obviously LDS. Mm-hmm. The next one is The Stray, which is a true story of a dog who saves a struggling family. I've never heard of that one. Of course, we have The Other Side of Heaven. We know that is, even though it was done by Disney, church themed. Love Kennedy, which is a church movie. Christmas Break-In. I've never heard of that before. I don't know. Think that's a church
movie. So maybe the theme is these are all just family movies.
I think these are all just movies that you
But they threw in a decent amount of church ones.
Exactly. Exactly. Movies that you can watch with your family and not be embarrassed.
Anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that concludes our newsy section.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our favorite things?
Sure. Let's do favorite things. You want me to go first?
Yes, you go first.
I had a hard time coming up with one this month, but I think probably the favorite thing that I've had over the past month that I could share with other people is a movie that I saw.
Oh, okay.
And it is the Bohemian Rhapsody movie about Queen.
Oh, you were telling me about it. I had no idea you were a Queen fan until you were telling me how much you loved the movie.
I mean, I loved this movie. And I'm a Queen fan in that, like, I have, I don't know, 4 or 5 of their songs downloaded. But I'm not, like, a groupie. Like, I don't follow them. I didn't really know much about the story of Freddie Mercury. So I went into this movie not knowing much other than I like a lot of their songs.
Okay.
But, you know, I pick and choose which ones I download.
Fair enough.
This movie was so good. You know what I think part of it was? Well, I think most of it, the music was amazing. Okay. And I think part of it was going to see it in a theater with amazing sound.
Oh.
Because there is so much good music in this movie and the sound in the theater and really interesting about his life.
Uh-huh.
And the band's life. And you know, you never know how much is embellished. They told a lot of his personal challenges and struggles. But they also shared a lot of just the creative side, how the band came up with these songs. And that was interesting. You don't know how much of that is real or not, but it was kind of fun to see them collaborate and work together. Anyway, so good. I would say, like, as of now, it might be my most favorite movie I've seen this year.
Dang.
The actor that plays Freddie Mercury, amazing.
So who is it? Do you remember?
I can't remember his name.
Is it a name? Brad guy?
He's in the iRobot show. Have you heard of – is that what it's called?
I haven't seen the iRobot show.
Or Mr. Robot. It's a robot show, and it's on Amazon, and I haven't seen it, but – I think my husband's watched it.
Okay.
Anyway, I can't remember his name. I should know his name because he was so good, but really good. He had like these teeth, fake teeth implants they put in him to make him look like Freddie Mercury.
Okay.
And I can't even imagine how he could even talk with him. But
wow,
he was really good.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe I'll have to see it because again, it's kind of like the Walmart thing. You tell me about it. I'm like, I don't know. But then I do it and I really like it.
Yeah.
Because like you and I, we've talked about this before. We kind of share a brain.
Yeah.
Usually if you like it, I'm going to like it too.
Yeah. You need to see it.
So maybe I need to go see the Bohemian Rhapsody. And you need to go see
it in the theater because I have a theory that this is one that you need to see in the theater.
It's better with surround sound.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So my favorite thing is I'm going to do a Christmas related thing. So of course at Christmas, they have all sorts of Christmas candy and Christmas products that come out. And I do like Christmas candy. I mean, a lot of it is the same thing. You know, it's Reese's in a red wrapper versus a gold wrapper.
A bell shaped Reese's.
But one of the things that they have at Christmas time is they have these shortbread cookies. And I think the brand name on them is like Stauffer's is the one that makes them. They come in a green bag. They're a shortbread cookie that has red and green sprinkles on it. They usually cost about $2 a bag. And they're really good.
Oh, so, I need to try.
And you can't, I mean, they're not on your regular cookie shelf. I've never seen them on the regular cookie shelf any other time of the year.
They're just a Christmas one.
They're just a Christmas one. And I'm a big fan of shortbread. I really do like Lorna Doones are probably one of my favorite cookies. So that is going to be my favorite thing. Ooh. A Christmas related thing, seasonal that you can only buy this time of year.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to try them.
So you'll have to try them. Okay, well, I think that about wraps it up for us. So, Twim Nation, thank you very much for listening to us today. We appreciate your continued support of This Week in Mormons. Of course, if you have any questions or comments, you can always send an email to contact@thisweekinmormons.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. And of course, this podcast is available in, I think, almost every format. Platform that you can have a podcast. So thank you for your support and have a very Merry Christmas.
Bye.